Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the fire.
Hello, everybody. This is Karin Sindri from the Change Strategist Show, and welcome to my second show. It's been an amazing day today because we've had a bit of techie issues, and my show has been delayed by 30 minutes, but all is well, and we are on our road ready to get rocking and rolling. And today I've got the most amazing guest with me, someone who I've known for a little while, and we share a really special and close relationship, and that is John. But just to tell you a little bit more about my show today is the Change Strategist Show is all about how we can help you to manage life's big changes. So those kind of changes are changes of a job, divorce, starting a new job, moving countries, and there are so many other changes that we experience daily in our lives. You will learn new strategies. You will learn how to navigate and empower yourself through change smoothly and ultimately make peace with change. Isn't that amazing? And I think that is all what we strive for, is to actually have peace. Change is something that we never ever are really prepared for. Sometimes it's comfortable, sometimes it's uncomfortable. And it normally takes us out of our comfort zone. And it often creates overwhelm, distress, sometimes even excitement, fear, and many, many other emotions. We all experience different kinds of emotions and different types of emotions when we go through change. But the only thing that is constant in our lives, and sadly so perhaps, is that it is change. So in today's show, we're going to learn about amazing ways to deal with a huge change that has often happened to many, many people. But before I start the show, if you'd like to phone in, the number in America is 646-716-7979. And if you are out of America, you can either contact me on my Facebook page, which is Pathways Unlimited, or you can go onto the Coach on Fire page and post your question there, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. If we do not get back to you, perhaps you would like to email John or contact him on his Facebook page. His email is theexperiencedbachelor.com, and you can post and ask him questions there too. So let's get going with the show. And just before I start with John, I just would like to introduce John to you. John is the founder of The Experienced Bachelor, a coaching practice specializing in working with mature divorced men, and now John is also working with divorced women as well. And it's helping them to improve their singles lifestyle and to attract the ideal partner. John brings with him experience of overcoming post-divorce blues twice. The first time after 29 years of marriage, and the second time after only 18 months. He's the author of a book about to be launched, and we will chat a little bit more about this book later on in the show. The title of his book is The Experienced Bachelor, which is basically based on his online program, which he will chat about a little bit later on in the show as well. So with no further ado, I'd like to welcome John to the show today. Welcome, John.
Hi, Garen. How are you?
Yeah, great. Thanks, and you. How's Melbourne today?
It's okay. It's not too bad. It's warm and a bit overcast, so it's kind of nice, and not too hot, not too cold. Lovely.
Oh,
thank you for having
great.
Me on, by the way.
Yeah, only a pleasure. And, you know, the funny thing, I was thinking this morning before the show started, I was thinking, wow, what can I talk about, you know, when we start the show? Because divorce is something that is so real, and it's something that I have been through myself, and I went through it when I was 33 years old and was totally unprepared for it. It basically just shattered me and left me feeling numb for probably about 2 weeks. So this is a really hot topic. It is something that many people have experienced and many people are going through. So So I'm so happy to be able to interview you about this.
Yeah, thank you very much for asking me.
Yeah, yeah. So just to start off with, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, John? Who is John?
Yes. Well, a bit about myself. I have been divorced twice. As I said, the first time after 29 years of marriage. And when that happened, I was like most people that have been in a long-term relationship and when it ends. And that is totally unprepared for it and totally without any skills to be able to get back into life again, so to speak. Apart from all the trauma of the divorce and the emotions that one goes through, when all of that eventually settles down after a couple of years and you find yourself that all the legals and the actual experience of going through the divorce process, when all of that settles down, you find yourself alone and probably for the first time in your life. In my case, it was that when I first got married, I got married to the second relationship that I'd been in, and remained like that for that. So I went from living with my mother to living with my wife, and so you develop this. I didn't have any skills for dating or for actually interacting on a singles basis, and I stayed like that for about 2 years. And when that changed, I remember it explicitly well. It was on a Friday afternoon in late autumn, and I was in the street, and I finished with a client that I'd been seeing, and I was ready to go home, and I just didn't want to go back to my apartment because I knew what was waiting there, which was nothing. And so I just mindlessly walked the pavement on this very busy, very social street full of restaurants, etc. And I had this distinct feeling of just not existing, that I was going past all these couples going to and fro and nobody even acknowledged that I was there. And I did that for about 20 minutes or so, and I just happened to run into a bookstore, a kind of odd, quaint bookstore that stocks mainly kind of unusual titles. And I just stepped in there just to break the monotony. And in there, when I was looking through the books, I found a book that was titled How to Date Young Women for Men Over 30. And I remember being totally surprised that there was a book about this stuff. And so I nearly read the half of the book there. I was so interested in it. Anyway, I ended up buying the book, and from that point, I started teaching myself and learning about how to get back to being social. And that is my experience that led for me to want to pass that on.
Yeah, and that is such a wonderful tool to be able to pass it on to people, because I remember when I went through my divorce, and I remember going out the very first night to a pub, I think it was, and I felt like all eyes were on me, and I didn't quite know how to be and how to behave and what to say and what to do. So I totally get that, and I'm loving what you're doing and the help that you are, you know, putting out there to help people, which is really great. And we'll chat a little bit more about that later on. So just looking at your business and knowing you, I know you changed the title of your business or the name of your business a couple of times, and you have now ended up with the Experience Bachelor. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? I love the title, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I did have an original business name, which was Regenesis, and it was based upon rebirth and starting over again type of theme, but it just didn't gain traction. And a woman came up with the Experience Bachelor. That's what she said. You know, that's what you are. You are an ex-husband, and you are experienced now in how to be a bachelor. And so she came up with a name, and it stuck. And and everybody loves it. So it's based on just that, on Bachelor. And I put a huge emphasis on the word Bachelor, and yet people still kind of tend to read it as being somehow, you know, somebody that's a player or somebody that's just out there to date and to go out, which it isn't. To me, it's all about changing identities. And I found that a lot of men, particularly when they become divorced, they are still set in a mindset of husband or wife. And so they come into the dating process with that mindset. And of course, it's not compatible with being on a date, because husbands and wives get so used to each other, they don't have the same thing. So they tend to act in much the way that they would act when they were with their wives, which was probably not very exciting, or they were sort of because of the familiarity that's involved, or they took liberties that weren't appropriate. So they would do things or say things that they were comfortable with saying to their wives or ex-wives, but are not appropriate to a total stranger that you're just meeting for the first or second time. So I wanted to really change that mindset to try and kind of jolt divorced couples, ex-husbands, into adopting an identity of a bachelor, so that they can then approach it differently.
So by you saying, just to clarify, by you saying an identity of a bachelor, meaning to sort of clean the slate and start again from a new slate, is that what you're saying?
Somewhat, yes. So you have to change your mindset to being a single person. Being single is just a state of being at the time. It just means that you're no longer married, so you're single. But single doesn't mean that you're a bachelor. A bachelor really means that you have a mindset of going out. You have a mindset of seeking new relationships. And that brings a totally different way of behaving when you're out on a date. You start to approach it in a different mindset.
Yeah. So it's basically just saying, you know what, I'm divorced now, but I'm ready to move on, and I'm ready to go into a new relationship.
Exactly. You're willing to let go of your persona of the husband.
Yes. Yes, because very often when you're married, yeah, that's correct. Very often when you are married, it's this feeling of they're just two people together, and the two people, that's you together. And the minute when that unity is split up, there is that absolute feeling of being lost. It's almost like a feeling like you've lost a limb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you become so attached to the person, so comfortable, etc., that almost best way I can describe it is, I'm sure you've been to restaurants and you've sat there and watched another couple go through the whole meal, through the whole evening, with barely having said a word to each other.
Yeah,
seen
that often.
You know, that's not the way you behave on a date.
Yeah.
So on a date, you would be more excited. You'd be trying to find out more about the other person, etc. The difference between that is that in that enthusiasm, ex-husbands ex-husbands can go overboard in their familiarity. So they tell inappropriate jokes. They talk about sex, or they ask about sex, or a whole bunch of other things that they can end up doing that they would have done and probably not raised an eyelid from their partner or their ex-wife at the time. But now it's totally inappropriate.
Yeah. So just you spoke about having the mindset of a bachelor. So how can a divorced person, be it a male or a female, a mature male or female, see themselves in a different way?
Well, this is where the change aspect of it that comes in. So, you know, this is, you know, you're the change strategist, and this is the strategies that I use in order to change. You have to start off from a physiological point first to change your psychological mindset. So I start off by actually getting men and women to actually change themselves physically, to start changing the way that they dress, the way that they look, the way that they present themselves, the way that they talk, etc., until they start to feel that they are different in look and appearance. A lot of times, ex-husbands, for example, you know, their wives used to buy their clothes for them. And most likely they still have the same clothes that they've had for the last 4 or 5 years. And they're usually pretty ordinary, drab, very utilitarian, and they're okay with it. They don't think about it. But it's not appropriate when you're out dating. The number of stories that I've heard people tell me about the way that guys turned up at dates just horrifies me. And so that's the first thing that we try to do. We change the way that they look. We also change the way that they feel in terms of their physical body. So we get them to get fit, to start sort of thinking about their body. If they've got excess weight, we get them to try and lose it. We're trying to sort of change any physical things that may be detrimental in how they come across and create attractiveness. Because attractiveness is all done on a physical and visual level.
You mentioned changing the way that you speak, your language, the language that you use. Could you elaborate a little bit more on
Well, again, it's a matter of how confident you are about yourself. So you're not sort of, you know, you're not hesitant, and also to be, you become more assertive about your actions. Again, men in particular, in a lot of ways, tend to sort of go into a secondary role, and they're quite happy to let things happen. The wife can order dinner, or she can set things up, and they just go along with it. That is not appropriate when you're a bachelor. You need to be in control. You need to be confident. You need to be assertive with your actions. And so that your language then changes on that. And one of the things that I've noticed, even personally, myself, even when I go get back into dating, is that how the actual mindset of the date when somebody goes on there, it almost goes into as if it's going into a job interview. And so a lot of the questions tend to be about finding out who they are, the background story of their previous divorces. And so the conversation then starts getting bogged down in a lot of what I call old baggage. And so you just start talking about their ex-wives, their kids, their bosses, where they've worked, and all the negative things. And that's not conducive to a successful date. I always look at it on the basis that if you don't go into a date with someone new with a view, I put it this way, and again, some people get this wrong, you have to come into the date with lust on your mind.
Yeah.
And then you have to end up having seduction to try and sort of take the date where you want it to go. By the time you have a date, you should already know roughly whether you want to have a date with that person or not, unless it is a blind date, in which case you don't know a thing about that person. But most often, it's somebody you've met, somebody that you've already had a conversation with, somebody that you are attracted to, somebody that you wanted to get to know more about. If you enter that date without lust and without seduction in mind, then it just becomes a job interview. It's just getting to know you. It's you go into friend territory, so to speak. That's the way you have to change your mindset. You have to change your language. You have to change the way you think about the date and what you actually want to get out of the date and where do you want to proceed or where you want this relationship to proceed to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, no, it does. And I think very often, I think people get confused with the word lust. And I think lust for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's more about having that attraction.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. If you don't have, everybody thinks that lust is all about the flesh and wanting to to get onto the person and to and sex and stuff like that. It isn't. Lust is really more about the true connection that you find from that visual attraction that you see somebody from 10 feet away, and instantly you're curious. Instantly you're attracted to that person. Now, if that person, once you've met them and you've talked to them and they then still seem appealing and they're still attractive, etc., if you don't change your mindset to lust and to seduction, then it just becomes a friendship. It's just a conversation you're having with another person that's going to become a friend. You don't have lust in your mind when you're doing that, when you meet anyone. So there is a big difference. And if you don't have that in mind, then what is a date? What are you dating for?
So you were just saying, so what is a date? So what crucial aspects do you need to have or are there that to have a successful date?
Well, I call it the A game. That's the third chapter, or the fourth chapter rather, the fourth chapter in my book, which is called The Experienced Bachelor, and it's based on my six-week program, which is called The Apprentice Bachelor. Originally, it started off as a program for men, but more and more women are approaching me now and asking me whether I also coach women, and I do, because the dynamics are basically pretty much the same, other than the fact that there's more feminine energy and masculine energy on the two different aspects, and so I tackle those on it. But the basics are still the same. So to me, it's all about having, you know, how to be assertive, how to be your attire, how you dress, how you present yourself to the world. There's a whole bunch of them. I can't think of all of them at the top of my thing, but it's attire, abode, where you live and what you drive, how you present yourself to the world, assertiveness, attraction, assertiveness, which is also confidence. All of those things you have to end up really building. There's skills in being a bachelor. And being a bachelor isn't just about connecting with women. Being a bachelor gives you the same mindset that men particularly require in landing a good job or a good position. And women find the same skills highly effective as well in landing a better job or a higher position or attracting a better salary or asking for a raise, etc. You have to have all of those aspects to be able to be successful.
And I remember when I was going out on my dates and things, it was something that I felt that I had to, when I went out, and it was really scary for me. I remember at the time that, I remember just walking into that pub and thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? Why am I here? And so on. And so it's about, like you said, having those skills to get yourself back into that whole dating scene and seeing yourself as being ready to move on. So how would you know, after you've gone through the divorce, how would you know when you are ready to move on?
Oh, you will know, because my program that I run is actually worked out in two parts. The first 3 weeks of the program I titled Getting Rid of Old Baggage. The second part of it is called Picking Up New Luggage. And the analogy there is that you're trying to get rid of all the baggage that's holding you back. And that's all about getting your mental mindset cleared of all the things that you've been hanging on to and dwelling on that are actually preventing you from moving on. And so we go through a three-week process where we're actually clearing up all the mindsets, the limiting beliefs, setting up new values, finding out what the values that they hold are, what it is that they want to get out of another relationship and why are they pursuing it or where are they going with it. All of those things you've got to go through that in the first 2 weeks. And the last session of that part of the program is actually called letting go. So we go through an exercise where we actually let go of everything and sort of give ourselves permission to move on so that we can actually be free to be bachelors and to seek new relationships. Because a lot of times, a lot of people that are still divorced don't give themselves permission. Even though they're dating and everything else, they go into it with guilt, with regret, with a whole bunch of other negative emotions that actually block them from actually moving on and finding a better relationship. And they usually do it on an unconscious level, and they give out these vibes that the other person picks up and says, you're not ready to be with me. And so that's what ends up happening. Once they've let go, once we do the exercise, then we start with the skills, how to improve, how to get better at being what we are, what we want to, where we want to go.
Yeah, and very often when you're going through that, when you've gone through the divorce, you're back into the dating scene, and if you haven't done this personal development work on yourself, very often you would attract probably a similar person. Is that correct?
I'm glad you raised that point. It's almost uncanny how often a second relationship after a divorce ends up almost being a carbon copy of the first relationship they had. So they end up sort of like marrying or remarrying the person that just left or left them. So it ends up. Because they keep seeking and they tend to attract and feel more familiar with those that they feel familiar with. And so they think, oh, this person is so, she understands me or he understands me. We're so compatible, et cetera, et cetera. And yet all they're really doing is that they're attracted to the sameness that they had originally. And they forget what it was that actually broke the relationship up in the first place. And so we've got to go through that. We've got to find out what it is that they actually want so that they can end up sort of setting up what it is that they don't want and what it is that they do want moving forward.
Yeah. And I like the way that you said when normally if people haven't worked on themselves and done any personal development work and they go into another relationship, it's they go into that relationship because they are familiar and it's something that they feel comfortable with. And therefore, that's why they will attract someone that is very similar to their ex.
Exactly. And in some cases, it can actually be the absolute opposite. They get attracted to somebody that is way diametrically opposed to who they want, and therefore their values aren't aligned. But because of the newness of the situation, et cetera, they're so excited about it, they feel that, oh, this is the person for me. And then when a relationship starts to evolve a little bit further and things get disclosed more and more, they start to realize that, you know, we don't have that much in common, or, you know, there's things that really annoy them about the other person, and they realize that their values aren't in line again. So values are a critical part of this whole equation. You've got to try and match up the values, your values as close as possible. I was just speaking with a client last night, and he was telling me how he had met this woman and they've been going together for 3 months or so. And he rang me to tell me that they've just broken up. I said, why? And I find out that, he told me that, oh, he's a Trump supporter and a far right thing, and she wasn't. And I said, well, what did you expect? You know, the values there were just so diametrically opposed that, that relationship would really, really need a lot of emotional intelligence to overcome those vast differences.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about values just now, just before we carry on. If there are any listeners out there would like to call and ask John a question, the phone number is 646-716-7979. Or if you would like to post a question on the email on the Facebook page or email John, you can email him as well on theexperiencedbachelor.com. John, we were talking about values. Perhaps you would like to clarify a little bit more what values are and what they mean?
Okay. Values is a difficult thing for people to get around to unless you sort of start doing a work on in personal development. I remember struggling with trying to find out what my values were. And the thing about values is that they also change. You have fundamental values that are important to you, but then you also have different values for different aspects of your life, and you also have different values for different times in your life. So some things that you might have valued 10 years ago may not be as important now that you're 10 years older. So those are the sorts of things. Now, values that come down to anything that you hold valuable to you, something that is kind of like something that is that must be in a relationship or you must have in your life. And a lot of people sort of tend to think about values as being sort of those abstract notions of love, kindness, humanity, laughter, and so on. And those can be values if those are important to you. But there are also other values that might not be as important. I value my possessions, for example, might be one that people would say, well, yeah, exactly, everybody does. But to somebody, they might have something that those possessions might mean something really special to them. And so on. So values are the things that are critical for you to be who you are.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm curious to know, and I'm sure the listeners are as well, is how can you link, how can you find somebody that has the similar values, or do you have to have the same values as your partner or the person that you are attracting into your life in order to make the relationship work?
There will always be fundamental types of values that people almost can't change. I mentioned one, politics and religions are two, for example. If you are a right-wing thinker, you will always be a right-wing thinker, and same with a left-wing thinker. Now, it's not unknown for people that are, you know, hard left or hard right thinkers to form into relationships. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Maria Shriver is a good example. He was a Republican and she's a Democrat, and they made a successful marriage for a long time. Now, in the same way, your religions can be, you know, really fundamental values that are difficult for people to change. So yes, of course, it will be important for those values to align at least. They don't have to be the same, but they have to align. Other values that people have are kind of more flexible. It all depends on, you know, how important they are to each individual and how flexible the other individual person can be towards those values. If they don't have them exactly, how well can they align with those values?
Yeah. And I think also, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that you'll meet a partner and your values are slightly different. They're not completely compatible, but with, you know, give and take and so on, a connection will be made. Is that correct? Between the two of you?
Oh, absolutely. It will be because you have different types of attraction. You've got physical attraction and then you've got intellectual attraction. And so you can be, you know, very highly attracted on a physical level. And when you start talking and getting to know each other better, which is the intellectual aspect of attraction, you will find that there's some things that you're attracted to and others that you're not quite attracted to in that regard. And this is where emotional intelligence and flexibility starts to come into play. You have to sort of be intelligent about how you're going to handle and manage those discrepancies.
Yeah.
And
I like
that for emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I like what you just said about the emotional intelligence and having that emotional intelligence to say, you know what, it's give and take. This is what we can work with, this is what we cannot work with, and be you know, adult enough to say, you know what, how can we change this? How can we make it better so that our relationship can move forward without having to let go of your own values?
Yeah, absolutely. And also you end up finding that a lot of the time, many people actually either give up some of the values that they held dear because they start taking on more values of the other person, which they happen to love. And so, and vice versa sometimes. The other person that held very high values for something other tends to soften and becomes part of her partner or his partner's values. So those can be interchangeable depending on how good the relationship is, how emotionally stable the two people are and how flexible they are in their emotional needs.
Yeah, and I like that, how flexible they are in their emotional needs. I think behavioral flexibility in any relationship is really, really important.
Oh, absolutely. Most relationships fail because needs are not met. When one or both partners don't meet each individual's needs, the relationship will fail. And it takes emotional intelligence and flexibility to actually meet somebody else's needs when they might not necessarily be your needs. That makes sense? As a coach,
absolutely.
You're familiar with the six core needs. And it's really important, and I go through this with my clients, I really get them to know what their needs are so that they can express them and work with them. And then I really teach them how to find as quickly as possible what their potential partner that they're meeting or that they're dating, to find out how quickly they can find what their needs are so they can start applying the meeting of their needs, because that's what sustains a relationship.
So could you share with me, like, say, for example, I'm recently divorced, I want to go out on a date. What kind of tips would you give me? Because I know a lot of people that I speak to that have been through a divorce, it's you know, where do I go? Where do I meet people? How do I meet people? What would your suggestions be?
Well, there's two ways to approach this. One is organic, which is what I call just going out and you just meet people that you meet and how you actually approach them or whether they're available and whether you want to develop something from there. So you're basically approaching someone and determining whether you want to go out on a date to find out a little bit more about them. That can be a real scary thing because not many people are very good at approaching total strangers. And so they tend to hesitate on that. The other aspect of that is you can do it like, we're fortunate now that the internet has been invented and pretty well established, where we have internet dating. And a lot of people don't like it and kind of malign it. But I think that it's a fantastic way of actually meeting and vetting the people you're willing to meet. So you're not going on blind dates and you're not doing the scary bit of approaching a total stranger who might look at you and say, what the hell are you talking to me for? Which, by the way, the reason that normally ends up happening is because they don't actually read the courting language that people give out. And so they approach when they haven't been given permission to approach, if that makes sense. So a lot of people tend to be in a social setting, et cetera, and then just if they've got enough courage to be able to do it, they'll walk up and introduce themselves with a pickup line or something or other, which may be appropriate or inappropriate. But if the person that they're approaching didn't give them a signal that said, okay, you can come, you can ask me, then they're going to be rejected. And then they get rejected, they lose confidence, and they stop trying. And if only they know the little courting signals that people, humans, give out, that can eliminate a lot of that, because you'll approach only the people that are willing to be approached.
So would you like to elaborate a little bit more about the courting body language? What do you mean by that?
Well, this is an interesting bit, because as you know, body language, our we say more, 70% of what we actually communicate is done through body language, through tonality, what we say, signals, little things that we do automatically. Those transmit more communication than what we do verbally. So the thing with in the courting aspect of it, when you're out there looking or interested in a romantic way, there is definite signals that are given out by men and by women that they're interested or that they're not interested. Now, not many people know this because it's not taught, and so people just, some people know this instinctively and some people just don't know about it at all. So here's a tip for people out there, and this is the probably the most common, and it is appropriate throughout all civilizations and all cultures. It's the same. So, for example, if you want to approach, if a man wants to approach a woman in a social setting or wherever they are, he will normally make eye contact, and if the eye contact is returned, he will smile. So that's the first signal that the man has given out. The woman will respond in one or two ways, positive or negative. It's okay to approach, or it's no, it's not okay to approach. The okay to approach, or let's start with an I'm not interested approach, because she might be married, she might be in a relationship, she might be reading a book, or she's busy, or she just doesn't want to be bothered. So what will end up happening is that she will return the eye contact, and she will not smile, but she will look to her side. Her eye movement will go sideways, and then she will look away. And that just means I'm not interested. So for anyone to actually just go up and say something or try to introduce themselves, they will get a probably at best a polite answer saying I'm not interested, or at worst a nasty answer sort of saying why are you bothering me. So that's the I'm not interested one. If the woman is interested, she will return the eye contact. She will smile slightly and kind of in an embarrassed way. Then her eyes will look down and then away. Right? Now, most people don't pick these up because they're not looking for it. But if you, I challenge anyone, if you go out and start doing that, exercise those things, even if you don't want to approach or whatever, just see how you respond and watch the eye movements, and you'll see that it'll be one of those two messages when the eye contact is made. So if you receive that message back, the body language signal that it says it's okay to approach, it doesn't mean, hey, come over here, I want to talk to you. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that if you approach me, I will most likely be polite and not do anything about it.
Yeah.
So in that case, it's a much better situation to be able to just be focused on what they're doing. And then if you get that signal to there, that means it'll be okay. You can approach and see what turns up from that. It may not be, it doesn't mean that she's interested and wants you to ask her for a date or something. It just means that I'm okay with that in terms of, sorry about that.
No worries.
Okay, so in that respect, that gives you, those are the two really appropriate body language secrets that most people just aren't aware of.
Yeah. I didn't know that either, John, so I've learned something new today. Thank you for that.
I would say that the majority of people don't know that. I didn't know that until I read it in a body language book. And then I actually tested it. And I was absolutely astounded by it, because once you start picking up those signals and once you start looking for them, they almost shout at you when you see them. And you think, oh, geez, I didn't realize. And so that kind of really eases the situation for a lot of people about in terms of coming up with their confidence. That doesn't mean that you're going to be really crash hot going in there and jumping up and being a gun bachelor going in there, because you still need the conversational skills, you still need the confidence, what to say, how to say it, the tonality, the approach, how you actually manage yourself, how you carry yourself on that approach of just going up and asking something. When you get there, what do you say? And corny pickup lines don't work. They just make people laugh, unless it's really clever.
Yeah. And I really love that idea of just staying present and being aware and noticing. I think a really important thing is being open to the situation and noticing people's body language and how they hold themselves and their physiology, which is really, really important to help you with reading whether that person is interested in you or not.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is that being present is only a very, very small part of it. Very important, but very small part. Unless you actually know what you're looking for, being present doesn't mean anything, because you're just present, you're aware of what you are. But you could be seeing the signals and you don't know what they mean. They just doesn't, you're not responding to them. So the thing is to actually know what those signals are, how to learn how to actually interpret them, so that you can then make sound decisions on what you read from those signals.
So just for the listeners out there, if anybody would like to call in, the phone number is 646-716-7979 if you would like to have a chat with John. We have about another 10 minutes or so of the show. So if you'd like to get in, please phone now. John, just chatting a little bit about your book. You mentioned your book. What is the main purpose behind your book, and what are you hoping the reader to get out of reading your book?
Well, the book, I wrote the book because it was my way of giving back the way that the book that I first read on that day, it saved my life, at least my social life, because through that I was able to actually see something. In those days, back 15 years ago, coaching and mentoring services weren't as prominent as they are now. So there weren't as many people doing that stuff. So I went the long and hard way of trial and error, reading, attending seminars, going to workshops, all of this stuff. I did a lot of personal development and so on. So my book is basically to try and give back to divorced people, kind of like a lifeline. And the first place that they will probably end up finding it is through a book, because they'll see that there is something out there. And this isn't just a book about my story. This book is actually the full six-week program outlined in a book. So it actually goes through 6 days per week by 6 weeks, what to do in each day to try and sort of get a different aspect of what you need to change in terms of personal development, so that you can get to be what you want towards the end of it. And so that was the reason I wrote the book. And created the online program, because that was the first thing. Now I can offer the same thing online, and then we also offer it as through a master bachelor's program, which is the actual online program, and the doing a personal unpack with me every week, so that we get through all of the things that they went through that week, and what we try to find out, where they're stuck or what they didn't get or what they want to work on a little bit more and so on. And so I help them there on a one-to-one basis. And of course, this is now also I'm now in the process of turning this into a two-day workshop, which we'll start doing probably next month.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. And John, how can people get hold of your book?
Well, the book arrives today, so that should be ready to go. The best shot is to actually message me on Facebook, which is the Experienced Bachelor, or go to the website, which is also The Experience Bachelor, but it's thexperiencebachelor.com. So you can go to the website or you can go through there. And we will be launching the book in the next few weeks, and so there will be landing pages on that for people to actually book and buy it online as well.
Oh, fantastic. That's great, John. And just to end off with, John, is there any special message that you would give out to the listeners, if there's anybody out there that's going through a hard time right now and wanting to meet somebody and to get out there? Is there a special message that you would pass on to them?
Yes, you have to be willing to change. You have to be willing to do something about the situation and get help, get professional help, guidance from people that have gone through it and that understand it and can actually, you know, take you through the process so that you can end up changing the mindset from being an ex-husband to being an experienced bachelor.
Yeah. And I love that. I think it's all about having that willingness, the willingness to get help, the willingness to move forward. And that is your first step, and acknowledging that you need that and to move yourself forward. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. And thank you so much for joining me. I know you need to rush off and go to another meeting. So today we have had John Sirik from The Experienced Bachelor on our show, and has shared some amazing things with us on how to help mature people who have gone through divorce and how to move their lives forward and to get back into the dating scene successfully and to cope with what's going on around them. And if anybody needs any support and needs any help, you can either email me on pathwaysunlimited.com.au or on my Facebook page, Pathways Unlimited. Or you could email John on theexperiencebachelor.com. So thank you so much, John.
Or just go to my Facebook page.
Yeah, or just go to your Facebook page. And so to end off with today, I'd like to share a quote with you. If you spend your time hoping someone will suffer from the consequences for what they did to your heart, then you're allowing them to hurt you a second time in your mind. And that was a quote by Shannon L. Elder. So, signing off for today and chatting in 2 weeks' time again with you, Karen Sindri from the Change Strategist Show. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
You there, Karen?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Bye. Go. Bye.
So you off the air now?
Yes, I am. You must go off, John.
Okay, not a problem. Yeah, I'm about to do it. Was that okay for you?
Wait, just go off first and I'll talk to you.
All right. Okay, thanks. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.